guest wisdom seekers, Ben Intendi, Ben Revere, Garrett Richards, Risk Severe. I check my league 10 times a day. What else do I have to say?
I gotta be strong up the middle. Continuing our middle infielders, yesterday was second base. Today we're talking about shortstops on Wednesday, February 22nd. Still got a long time before the season starts, so things are going to change. You got to listen to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast every day from here on out. We'll give you the best information. I'm Adam Azer, at Heath Cummings SR on Twitter, at Heath Cummings Sr. Hello, Heath Cummings Sr.
Don't at me, bro.
Oh, okay, sorry. Just Heath Cummings Sr. then. See what happens. At CBS Scott White, how you feeling, buddy?
A little better. Hopefully I sound a little better. I'm a junior, by the way. I'm not Heath Cummings Jr. But we got a senior and we got a junior.
You're Scott White Jr.?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
It's not in my handle. I'm not as proud of it as right. You are of your senior, but
right. Well, you didn't really do anything to earn it. You were just given it. I had to earn the senior.
Oh, you did. You didn't just hand it out to yourself.
And I am just plain old boring Adam Azer, at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Follow us on Twitter. Hey, leave us a good review in iTunes if you wouldn't mind. Give us a 5-star rating, good comment. And tell your friends. Spread the word. We're going to help you win your fantasy baseball league. How would you guys compare shortstop to second base? What do you think?
I think it's worse. My overall assessment of the shortstop position this year is good news and bad news. The good news is it's as deep as it's been since probably I first started playing fantasy and Alex Rodriguez, Nomar Garciaparra, and Derek Jeter were there. The bad news is it's still clearly the weakest position, except catcher, which hardly counts as a position.
It's really top heavy. Like, there's three players that I think you should take in the first 15 picks at shortstop, and there's another one that's being drafted in the first 15 picks that will become a shortstop eligible 1 week into the season.
Trey Turner.
Yeah, and then there's two others, Bogarts and Lindor, that are borderline third or fourth round picks. And then, whatever.
Well, I think that whereas, you know, I was saying don't reach at second base, and you should listen to the whole preview and get everybody's thoughts on it, but we kind of felt like there was good depth at second base. I think I might want to spend a little more at shortstop and try to get one of the elites. I think Trevor Story belongs in that conversation, though.
He has a chance to move into that conversation. So does Aledmys Diaz. And yeah. I suppose you could say, based on what they did last year, if they were to repeat what they did last year, so do Jonathan Villar and Gene Segura. I just don't think that's very likely.
Yeah, those four are the one-year wonders. That's how we have to classify them right now. They have a chance to kind of break free of that. Kind of like Francisco Lindor did last year. I think there was a lot of skepticism about him at this time a year ago, but he validated it with a performance very similar. By the way, to kind of really contrast, since you compared it to second base, Adam, Francisco Lindor is part of the proven
right
elite shortstops, I guess we could call them. He averaged fewer head-to-head points per game last year than Ian Kinsler, Dustin Pedroia, and DJ LeMahieu, who are like mid-round, sometimes even falling to late-round second baseman. So, you know, on the second base podcast, I brought up the idea of maybe drafting a second baseman as your utility player. Not going to happen at shortstop. If you draft a shortstop eligible player, it's almost surely going to be to play him at shortstop.
Yeah. Now let's clarify. You definitely think who was the shortstop you just mentioned? Sorry.
Francisco Lindor.
You definitely think that Lindor has more upside, though, than the guys he finished ahead of Kinsler, LeMahieu. I don't remember who else you said.
I don't know that I'd say definitely. I feel like what he was last year, good plate discipline, high batting average, borderline 2020 guy. I think that's basically who he is. I do think Pedroia, Kinsler, and LeMahieu have more downside.
Downside, yeah.
He's 23 years old, though.
Okay.
Like, we almost never, right now, I think we did it yesterday with Rougned Odor, but almost never do we decide a 23-year-old has shown us his best season.
I think when he comes up and exceeds expectations by as much as Lindor did.
But he wasn't.
You can't rule out anything, but I'm not drafting Lindor counting on him taking a step forward.
Right. Actually, you bring up the age, and that's probably the most exciting thing about shortstop. Manny Machado is 24 years old. Xander Bogaerts is 24. Carlos Correa is 22. Corey Seager is going to be 23 in April. Lindor is 23. Segura is going to be 27 next month in March. Jonathan Villar is 26. Trevor Story is 24. So,
okay, Addison Russell. What's he, 23?
Yeah, Addison Russell as well. Aledmys Diaz, I don't know how old he is, but he ain't old. So we got some young talent at the position. I think, okay, so big difference is like 1 through 12, second base is pretty good. Like you're probably going to have a second baseman you feel comfortable starting in a 1 second baseman league in a 10 or a 12 team league. Shortstop might be a little bit different. You know, there's a bigger gap, between, let's say, like number 6 and number 12. So you might want to invest a little bit more heavily. But one thing I did notice, I just looked at last year's standings, which, you know, things could change totally. Last year, if you compare number 13 through 18 at second base and number 13 through 18 at shortstop, and I'm not talking about rankings, I'm talking about who finished 13 through 18, it's basically exactly the same production. Shortstops were actually a little bit better on average in points leagues. They were almost exactly the same as second baseman and roto. So if you're playing in a league that requires a middle infielder, I do feel like I'm much more likely to fill that with a second baseman, you know, like a Devin Travis or a Jonathan Scope or something. But got to give the shortstops their credit, their due, like Didi Gregorius, Asdrubal Cabrera, Troy Tulowitzki. These guys
performed. Yeah, you say those guys. I'm thinking guys like Jose Peraza, Tim Anderson, sure. Javier Baez, Dansby Swanson.
Yep, them too. I'm just talking about the guys from last year.
Upside.
Yeah, so... So in the teens, at the rankings in the teens at second base and shortstop, does it feel similar to you?
Yeah, it's similar. Because, I mean, Heath mentioned some of the higher upside guys. Then you have, like, Brandon Crawford, who's this time a year ago, we were talking about him as a top 10 shortstop, and now he's
still
barely getting drafted as a middle infielder. You have Didi Gregorius, who... nearly hit 20 home runs and nobody cares.
He did hit 20 because home
of the death. Oh, he did hit 20 home runs?
On the nose.
Marcus Semien has good power for a shortstop. Mm-hmm. And these are all guys you can get late. You're not, it's not just, late
bad
round
bread.
Shortstops aren't just, you know, waving the white flag anymore.
But you know what's weird? It's like you can make a case for any of those guys and I don't know that you have to draft any of them. I feel like these are, there's so many waiver wire pickups, unless you're in a deeper league, you know, like a 14-team league or an AL-only, NL-only league. A lot of the guys we might talk about today are just players you should maybe keep in mind and put on your radar. And if they get off to a good start, maybe you pick them up, but you don't necessarily have to draft them. Okay.
I think the interesting thing is, like, going back to the comparison to second base, I like the top three at shortstop better. I like the upside guys in the teens better. It's just from like 4 through 12, mm-hmm. second base is so much better.
Yeah, and you like Jose Altuve better than any shortstop.
Right, but just the top three, Machado, Seager, Correa, I'll take those over Altuve, Dozier, Cano, or Altuve, Turner.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd rather have Seager or Correa than Turner for sure.
All right, so look, we're going to come back to shortstop in a second. We have to talk about first base really quickly and a catcher that's, you know, in the news, Matt Wieters to the Nationals. But first base correction. A really good email yesterday from Alex Brackfield. How would you pronounce that? B-R-A-C-H field?
Brockfield. I'd say Brockfield.
Brockfield. Yeah. A Rockies fan and a loyal listener. He says, dear Reese, Malcolm, Dewey, and Francis.
Those are the sons on Malcolm in the middle.
Yes, it is. I just listened to the first base preview, although Ian Desmond was brought up on the following show for players who have received a positive change in situation. No mention of Desmond as a first baseman. Is this because he currently isn't eligible, or is he simply more valuable as an outfielder? This is a 12-team roto league. And I will start answering that, Alex, by saying Desmond was not mentioned on the first base preview because I screwed up and I forgot, and I should have mentioned him. So thank you. That is important, and it really makes first base... better, a lot better. What do you guys think?
But to be fair, he isn't currently eligible. He will get it so soon in the year that we probably should have brought him up.
Exactly. Yes.
But I do think he's probably a little more valuable in the outfield, but it's not such a big gap that like there's no chance you'd play him at first base. If he was already first base eligible, I see him as pretty similar to Will Myers in that you feel pretty confident predicting at least a 2020 season for him. He'll probably at Coors Field. He'll probably outperform Myers in batting average, but maybe not quite as much home run power. So very similar to where I have Myers ranked. I think right now I have Myers 50th overall in points. That's all I had time to look up, in 75th overall in Roto. Too big of a gap. I need to move Desmond up.
You got Myers higher in points than Roto?
Yeah. Well, higher in points than Roto? No.
Okay, so you said 49th in points and 75th in Roto.
No, Myers is 50th, Desmond is 75th.
Okay.
Overall.
Okay.
In points. And I probably need to close that gap a bit.
I've got Myers, because I think he said his league is Roto, right?
Yes.
I've got Myers 49th in Roto as the 7th first baseman. I would have Desmond ahead of him. So right around the 4th round for Desmond.
Okay.
Which is where I have him now. I'm not going to move him up because he's first base eligible. He's 39th overall, so.
What it does, though, is it makes it a little easier to fill first base. You know, if you don't put Matt Carpenter at first base, if you don't put Daniel Murphy at first base, mm-hmm. well, then you're talking about a position that has like 11 guys that we really like, 10 or 11 maybe. And
I'd say 12 with Desmond in
with
there.
With Desmond, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Desmond would make it a nice 12. And then after that, you're looking at like Pujols, Hosmer, guys that you don't want necessarily to be your starter. So it does help, and it's something you should keep in mind on draft day. The Nationals signed Matt Wieters to a 2-year, $21 million deal. What did you do with Matt Wieters in your rankings?
Nothing. I had already ranked him, expecting him to be the primary catcher somewhere, as he didn't go to like Colorado or something. He was going to stay put. He's outside my top 12, somebody who I'm probably not going to bother with except in two catcher leagues. It could create an interesting ripple effect, though, because the Nationals had already acquired Derek Norris to be their starting catcher, and so now they're shopping catchers, and they need a closer. The White Sox need a catcher. I'm just saying, be on the lookout for a Daniel Robertson trade to go down, and don't spend too much on Sean Kelly if you're already drafting at this point.
Yes, even David Robertson could get traded.
David Robertson. I knew I was going to say the wrong person.
Yeah, I've got him as a borderline top 12 catcher. I may actually have him 11th, which I think is where Chris has him too. If I've waited until the very end of the draft and it's a one catcher league, I'm likely to take him if he's still there.
All right, Wieters, 0.62. All right, here's the kind of convoluted stat. First of all, Wieters finished as the number 12 catcher in both points and Roto last year. He's turning 31 in May. He averaged 0.62 fantasy points per plate appearance. That's exactly what Wieters averaged in 2013. And that year, he was the number 4 catcher in points, number 6 in Roto. He scored 351 fantasy points. If he had scored 351 fantasy points last year, he would have been the number 5 catcher. So I understand, you know, he's around 12th, 14th for you guys, but there's such a mess there. It's really, there's no reason why Wieters couldn't be a fifth best catcher.
He could. I have Yadier Molina and Stephen Vogt ahead of him. I mean, he could outperform them. I could see him outperforming Brian McCann if McCann doesn't play as much as we're used to with Gattis there in Houston.
Yeah, I've got him ahead of McCann, Vogt, and Molina at 12th. Chris actually has him 9th. And I can see that. Like, I can see a good argument for putting him ahead of JT Realmuto.
Okay. Back to second shortstop. Actually, also, Major League Baseball is changing the intentional walk rule. You no longer have to throw 4 pitches out of the strike zone. You just signal it from the dugout. What do you think about that?
I don't particularly like it, but like most other things, I think the outrage over it is kind of silly because nobody really cares. Nobody's going to notice.
Yeah.
I think MLB is a little bit too consumed with speeding the game up. And if you really wanted to speed the game up, you could just call the strike zone like it's defined in the rules.
Like, how many intentional walks are called in a game?
I think one every 3 games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very low now.
But at the same time, like, the only downside is you get that potential disaster scenario where there's a wild pitch outside the zone on an intentional walk and a runner can move. Like, it just seems like a low impact rule change as opposed to that thing they're testing out in the low minors where runners at second base.
That's ridiculous.
In extra innings. That's ridiculous.
The one good argument I've heard for being mad about it, about them getting rid of it, is that people don't like intentional walks. and think it's cowardly and want the opportunity to boo the opposing team for the four pitches while they perform the intentional walk.
You can boo them still, just not as long.
Yeah, exactly. I think intentional walk is a waste of time. The wild pitch is very rare, so it's fine, whatever. Okay, now let's go back to shortstop. And you remember, I could have copied and pasted this from the second base preview. The landscape has changed. In 2015, three players currently eligible at shortstop hit 20 or more home runs. Three in 2015. In 2016, 15 players currently eligible at shortstop hit 20 or more home runs. And five of those hit 20 or 21 home runs. That all of those numbers are exactly the same as second base. It's kind of weird. And there's probably some overlap there, like Gene Segura. Might be some players who are eligible both, but not that many. So it's just kind of weird. But yeah, still, 20 home runs, three players did that in 2015 at shortstop. 15 players did that in 2016. And a good comparison, kind of like D. Gordon, is Troy Tulowitzki. Troy Tulowitzki scored 350 fantasy points in 2015. Tulowitzki scored 350.5 fantasy points in 2016. So the same exact year, basically. He was the number 5 shortstop in 2015 and the number 19 shortstop in 2016 is a mind-blowing stat. So things have changed. Tulowitzki was actually 19th in points. He was 16th in Roto last year.
The thing that strikes me when I look at the shortstops that hit 20-plus home runs last year, like half of them are irrelevant in a standard league.
Right, that's what I was saying.
Brad Miller, Marcus Semien, Danny Espinosa, Asdrubal Cabrera, Didi Gregorius, Freddie Galvis.
But they're irrelevant on draft day, but let's give them some credit. Like, they did some good things last year, and they might help you out at some point in the season. You might pick them up. You might have an injury.
Look, we just don't believe that most of them are going to do that again.
Depends on the home run landscape. We don't know what's going to happen this year. If the balls were juiced, you know, and they're still juiced, they might. Why not?
I Freddie Galvis over or under 19 home runs.
He's the worst example.
Okay. Yeah. Didi Gregorius.
I think he could do it.
I might take the under on him too, but not like Marcus Semien. If anything, Semien could maybe grow into more. I think
Asdrubal Cabrera goes under 20.
I think all of these players are like, yeah, there's no reason to dig that deep into shortstop in a standard head-to-head lineup where there's no middle infield spot, but in Roto, and particularly I'm thinking like an auction scenario in Roto where you can allocate your dollars so that, you can do the studs and duds approach so that you really want to find good value $1, $2 players. I think these kinds of players might be the perfect guys to target for that because, yeah, it's cheap power at a position where you're not going to find as much power as other positions, and so it's a good way to pad a roster without having to pay for it, I guess, to pad that category.
Okay.
I just don't know if it's a reliable way to pad that category.
Maybe not.
No, but
like I said, I'd prioritize somebody like Semien over Galvis, but in our NL only league, I was in the bidding on Galvis just because, you know, what else, like for that little money, who else even has a chance of doing what he did last year? He was nearly 20-20 last year.
I'm going to put the over under at 8 shortstops, the top 20 home runs this year, maybe 9.
I'm going to take the over. From 15 last year, I'm going to take the over, and who knows who.
If I would have said it at 8 last year, you would have taken the under.
Oh, yeah, because there were 3. But I just think I don't know. It's hard to have an increase in home runs like we had last year and not expect it to be even fairly legit. I'm not talking about position by position. I'm talking about league-wide.
But the huge jump happened at second base and shortstop.
I mean, we keep saying that, but I think that's because those guys didn't really hit a lot. Like, I'm not sure how to collect this thought, so I'm probably going to move on.
Percentage-wise, the huge jump happened at second and shortstop. Guys that went from 28 to 33 home runs or 28 to 34, 35 home runs, it's not the same jump.
Right. All right. Well, anyway.
I don't know that you could just... Like, it was so widespread and such a big jump from one year to the next. Like, it's hard for me to just say there was a bunch, like, to attribute it all to random chance. Like,
right.
Nobody knows exactly why there was a big jump in home runs. There's, of course, plenty of theories. The ball was wrapped tighter. That's one I've seen that might have some validity. But, like, just putting it all on random chance, I don't know. That to me seems more far-fetched than not. But I know we have different sensibilities as far as that goes.
Right, and I'm not saying it has to all be on random chance, but there, of some of the possible explanations, those may not exist this coming season.
All right, but here's the thing. Everybody played in the same environment last year. Everybody will play in the same environment this year. Whether that's a different environment is irrelevant. The fact is, if these shortstops lose their 20 homer power, same thing's going to happen at second base. Same thing's going to happen everywhere. Home runs are going to go down. It's not just going to happen at one position. And these shortstops, it's important to know where they measured up with other position, with second base in particular, last year. And like I said, in the teens, it was very similar. So if the power goes down at middle infield, it's going to affect second baseman and shortstop equally, you would think. I mean, it might be some outliers.
You would think, but what Heath is pointing out is that wasn't the home run increase didn't affect positions equally. It was mostly concentrated to the middle infield. It was disproportionate how the power grew at those positions relative to the others. The problem with thinking this way is I don't know how to reverse attribute it. Like, I mean, you could pick out cases, individual cases where you could be like, okay, this guy looks like he overperformed with the home runs. But like the clear examples of that are so few relative to ones where we're just guessing. And so like, I don't know how much you can really let it affect your approach because it all boils down to guessing.
Yeah.
I would just say the way it's going to affect my approach is if a guy's fantasy relevance is based almost entirely on an uncharacteristic home run increase last year, I'm mostly going to expect that to regress.
Okay. Well, the bottom line is I don't want to talk any more about these players, or not now anyway, because we should talk about the elite shortstops here. So, first of all, when you look at who was elite, nobody last year, except in roto leagues. Jonathan Villar was the number 6 hitter. Gene Segura was number 12. Manny Machado was number 22 in roto and number 18 in points as a hitter. And this is a 37 homer, 96 RBI, 105 run season. So, steals, you kind of have to look at steals at shortstop because this is a position where you will get some steals. 6 players had more than 20 steals last year. With only 4 second basemen stole 20 or more. Only 2 first basemen, no catchers. So outfield, obviously, you're going to get a lot more. But Machado, here, first question for shortstops. Does Manny Machado need to steal bases to be worthy of a first round pick? And I know we take him in the first round every single time. I would, but it's a question worth asking. Like I said, 18th best hitter in points, 22nd best in roto last year after a great season, and no steals. Does Manny Machado have to steal bases to be worthy of a first-round pick?
No. I don't think he does for a couple reasons. One, I think the position scarcity is still factors enough, him being shortstop eligible, that even though he was 18th in points leagues, 22nd in roto, we could dispute whether or not he was really the 22nd best hitter because... You know, he was probably the way that formula weight steals might not necessarily be fair. So points leagues, him being 18th. Okay. He was 18th, but being 18th as a shortstop still counts for more than being 13th as a first baseman.
Yep.
So, I think that's fine. And two, if you do want to hold the home run increase against certain shortstops, I don't think Machado's one you could hold it against. He had 35 the year before.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think at this point with the calf injury, would you take Manny Machado as of February 22nd ahead of Josh Donaldson?
No, but I'm much closer than I was. I was, I think, the only one that still had Donaldson number 1 at third base, and I dropped him down to 1 spot in front of Machado.
Do you think Machado will steal even 10 bases this year? Because in 2015, he stole 20, and last year, Machado stole 0.
I'd bet against it. Yep. I think once a hitter turns that corner and goes from being, kind of the table setter role where he's more likely to run to guy who's driving in runs and not being asked to run. Like, it usually, once a hitter progresses to that point, he usually doesn't go back. And the 20 steals were just a complete outlier to begin with. Earlier in his career, he wasn't a base stealer either.
Okay. So let's move on. Let's talk about the next group here. Two shortstops, Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. You might be a little surprised to know that Seager, as great as he was, 308, 26 home runs, only 72 RBIs, 105 runs, only three steals. Seager was the number five shortstop in points, number seven in Roto. Correa took a step back last year, number seven shortstop in points, number eight in Roto, and he was a first round pick last season, finished as, again, seventh in points, eighth in Roto. Do Corey Seager and or Carlos Correa have superstar upside? Superstar upside.
100%. Both. No question about it.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Next. Who is most likely to be a first or second round pick in 2018? So we look at three guys who are being drafted right around each other in the third round, maybe early fourth, depending on your league. Most likely to make the jump next year. First or second round, Xander Bogaerts, Francisco Lindor, Jonathan Villar.
You know, I'm going to say most likely, and he has the most bust potential of the 3-2, but I'm going to say Villar, because if he is able to replicate that performance, it'll kind of be like what happened to Carlos Gomez back when he first broke through with the Brewers, and everybody was kind of skeptical of it. Guy never walks. Can he hit for that much power again? And he did, and suddenly he went from being like a fifth rounder in fantasy to a first rounder that following year, just because of the way he validated that performance. I mean, VR, just last year's numbers at face value, particularly in Roto where steals are so valuable, it was kind of a first round caliber season. So
oh yeah,
if he can do it again, like he doesn't have to get any better than last year. He just has to do last year again. Then I think he's somebody we at least consider for the first round next year.
I'm going to say not VR. And I think everything Scott said is right. I just don't think it's going to happen. So I'm going to say Bogaerts. I don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility that he has a 3-10, 25 to 30 homer, 100 RBI season.
Yeah. Like,
and as a shortstop, like he may be in the Manny Machado class.
Right. Bogaerts was the number four shortstop in both points and Roto last year. He's only 24. He hit .294 with 21 home runs. He stole 13 bases. 115 runs scored were the most at the position. But, you know, I feel like he'll be up there among the leaders this year. And Bogaerts and Lindor both actually struggled a little bit after the All-Star break. Bogaerts was bad almost after the .250 with 11 home runs. But does Bogaerts have superstar potential? What do you think?
I'm less convinced of him than Seager and Correa, obviously, because I rank him lower.
Sure.
Certainly his minor league profile called for that, and the way he's progressed in his major league career would seem to validate it. It just, the underlying numbers don't fully support that he's even really as good as he showed last year. BABIP was really high in the first half, and then his second half numbers when the BABIP kind of normalized were not very good. So if he has a full year with kind of a normalized BABIP, he may be a disappointment. I think of those three you originally listed, Lindor, Bogaerts, and VR, like VR's the riskiest, sure. But Lindor is far and away the safest, because I don't know that I consider Bogaerts all that safe.
You don't? How come you don't consider Bogaerts safe? He's.
I just told you. The BABIP was so high in the first half, and then his second half numbers weren't very good.
Yeah, I know, but he's got power. He plays in a good lineup. His OPS has improved two straight years. Pretty drastic.
I think the power will need to improve to salvage what he lost on batting average in the second half, which may have been a little closer to normal than the first half.
All right. It's an interesting group. And you know what? We can talk about that more when we look at ADP. More shortstop questions. Trevor Story, more of an observation. 0.83 fantasy points per plate appearance. That was better than Gene Segura, better than Manny Machado, better than Jonathan Villar. I think Story would have been the number one shortstop in fantasy had he not gotten hurt. He tore a ligament in his thumb. That sucks that he's coming back from
that. Big leap. Big leap to take.
Well, yeah, 45. He was on pace for 45 home runs last year. Is the thumb, how much is the thumb injury factoring in your ranking of Trevor Story?
Well, almost none for me. It's more legitimacy. Story's strikeout rate was so high, and yeah, Coors Field provides him with a great safety net. He could be able to maintain the, well, he had 272 last year. I might put his baseline at closer to 260, even factoring in the Coors effect. But obviously a lot of his home run total was built on the crazy first week and a half, which isn't to say he became powerless after that, but in May he hit only 4 home runs, in June he hit only 5 home runs. It's more...
That's good.
It's more like a 30 to 35 homer profile, though, than I think 45 home runs.
Okay.
Like, I'm not trying to suggest Story isn't bad, he's not valuable, just, like, the pace was a little too high. Kind of like we always say for Gary Sanchez, great power hitter, but he's not going to hit 60 home runs. Story, great power hitter, but I don't see him hitting 45 home runs.
Yeah, Story, Heath, I want more in a roto league, like a season-long league. He's going to be a streaky player, and he batted .313 with a .693 slugging percentage at home. Story batted .235 with a .450. He still hit for power on the road, but he was a terrible hitter, basically, for average on the road. So I think he's going to frustrate you in weekly formats. But in a seasonal roto league where you just put Story in your lineup and you forget it and you just get his end of season numbers, that's kind of where I find his appeal. What do you think?
He's definitely more valuable in a roto league for sure. And it's partially because of what you said. It's partially because he's going to strike out so much that's really going to hurt you in points.
All right. Now, Aledmys Diaz also averaged more fantasy points per plate appearance than just about every other shortstop. I think Trevor Story was the only one that was better than Aledmys Diaz. A lot of Diaz's production came in his first 19 games. He hit 13 home runs. He had an OPS over 1,300. The rest of the season, there was an injury in there, Diaz had an 800 OPS. So,
wait,
what do you think?
You said 13 home runs in his first 19
well,
games?
When I said it, it felt wrong to me. But,
almost certainly was.
But he got off to a big start. Let me see. Let me just get my notes. Okay, no. He hit .468 with 4 home runs. He had 13 RBIs, but he had .468, which is contributing to, and he hit 8 doubles, which is contributing to his 1,300 OPS.
Right.
He hit 13 home runs rest of season and finished with 17 on the year. Sorry about that. But still, yeah. First 19 games, 1,300 OPS, last 92 games, 800 OPS. What do you think about Aledmys Diaz, guys?
The problem I have with Diaz and Story is, like, Diaz kind of came out of nowhere, and he doesn't have Coors Field. But when you look at his peripherals from last year, what he did looks more sustainable to me than what Story did.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't feel like either one of them can match what they did in 2016, but there's a part of me that feels like, man, there's really no reason to believe in Aledmys Diaz. There's such a small sample size and we didn't expect this. But you look at all those peripherals and he was a good hitter. I mean, the line drive rate sucked.
Yeah.
But other than that, he was a good hitter.
Well, and the thing about Aledmys Diaz is, no, we weren't expecting it. In part because the Cardinals gave us no reason to believe they were even thinking about him in a full-time role.
Right.
So we weren't looking at him that closely. His last minor league season, 2015, he had 13 home runs and 425 bats, really turned the corner and started hitting for power later in the year, and then carried that over into the Arizona Fall League, where he hit 4 home runs and 73 at bats. He made some kind of adjustment that allowed him to tap into power more, and then it obviously carried over into the majors last season. So, and he's such a good contact hitter, low strikeout rate. I love that. Obviously, it's imperative for batting average, and if there's power to go along with it. Points leagues, I think he's more exciting because he may top out at only 20 home runs, which doesn't really stand out at shortstop as much as it used to. But with a low strikeout rate, I mean, last year in points leagues, he was better on a per-game basis as Diaz was than Seager. And
Lindor, like I said, point per plate appearance, he was second best behind Story.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I feel like the underlying numbers make it less mysterious than Story. So I'm actually like, no, but Aledmus Diaz isn't getting a lot of credit in fantasy. I know Story sometimes goes as early as like round 4. Diaz I can usually get in round 7. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to take him there. I mean, I'm not going to pass up Seager if I can get him like early in round 2, or Lindor if I can get him like in round middle of round 4. But if it doesn't work out, I'm happy to take Diaz as my starting shortstop in round 7, and he may give me similar production at a much lower cost.
I've got Story 6th and Diaz 7th in Roto. I've got Diaz 6th and Story 7th in head-to-head.
Since this is a young position, who are the best dynasty picks? Like, you know, like who would you reach for a little bit earlier in dynasty leagues?
Well, Seager for sure, Correa for sure,
Machado. Like he's
everyone
24.
Machado.
Like, there's
yeah.
not an old player. Like I guess maybe you downgrade somebody like Gene Segura because he's 3 years older than everybody else at the position.
Yeah, not as certain of maintaining. In fact, I'm sure Heath would even say he won't maintain, but VR, same way.
I'd say the guy like, that you upgrade want... is Addison Russell.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to go there too. Addison Russell, who showed a lot of signs of breaking out last year. I mean, he's my breakout pick for the position.
So yeah, let's go into sleepers, breakouts, and busts. You can start with your breakouts here. And Addison Russell has not really shown much, but Scott sees something there that he likes. He's your breakout pick.
Yeah, I think he got burned on batting average last year. To sum it up, he took a big step back in that area from 2 years ago while taking a big step forward in power, upping his home run total from 13 to 21. But, you know, he hit to only 238. Actually, it wasn't a big step back. He went from 242 to 238 in batting average. So, you know, 21 home runs, especially the way it played out last year, it's not so valuable when you're hitting only 238. What took a big step back for Russell was BABIP from 324 to 277. He cut way down on his strikeout rate. He upped his line drive rate, upped his home run production. Those three should work together to raise batting average significantly, and yet it fell 4 points from 242 to 238. I think with the power gains Russell made last year, and if that batting average just normalizes to what all the peripherals say it should be, he could have a season very similar to the one we saw from Xander Bogaerts last year, which would make him a borderline top 5 shortstop. So round 10 or so, happy to take him too.
Okay, Heath, breakout for you at shortstop.
I'm going to go with Tim Anderson.
All right.
The overlooked Tim Anderson. He showed a little more pop in his limited action last year than what was expected, but he did have 11 home runs in the minor leagues in 2014, like 450 at-bats. He has 40 stolen base potential. He's hit 300 at basically every level that he's played at in the minor leagues. And the thing I like the most is, yes, the White Sox are going to be awful, but he's going to get to hit at the top of the order. He's still going to have Melky and Abreu and Frazier behind him for a while, so plenty of run-scoring opportunities, but he should get to run as often as he wants. Like, every time he gets on base, you might as well run. You're on a bad team. I think players on bad teams get the green light a little more often, especially a young player with his type of speed.
Would you rather have Elvis Andrews, who finished in the top 10 at shortstop last year, or Tim Anderson?
I mean, I'll take Anderson.
Yeah?
I'll take Andrews because Anderson's one of those low, like extreme low walk players, and so that always scares me in terms of whether or not they can achieve their ceiling. So I'll play it safe and take Andrews, even though I don't really like him.
All right, would you take Dansby Swanson, Heath, or Tim Anderson?
I'll take Tim Anderson in Roto.
Really?
I'll take Dansby in points.
All right. Give me sleepers, guys. Let's go to the sleepers at shortstop. Heath, you can go first.
I'm going back, and Scott's going to groan at this, but I'm going back to Brandon Crawford, who was, what, sleeper, bust, sleeper? No? So he'll be a bust again next year?
Yeah, I have him on my bust list, actually.
You can't be a bust.
He can be a bust.
I still have him in points leagues as a top 10 shortstop.
Okay.
We said going into last year that he's can't maintain that type of home run to fly ball rate. But it fell back too far low again. I think he's a 15 to 18 home run type guy. should be able to hit right. I think when he was hitting 240, 250, it was a little bit surprising. Because the BABIP was pretty consistently under 300. Last year he got it up to 275, and I don't know that that's that far-fetched. So I think top 10 in points. What's going to have to happen for Crawford to be a sleeper is for me to be right about the home run regression this year at the position. If everybody else keeps hitting 20 home runs and that was real, then he's probably going to have a hard time getting into the top 10.
Right. Okay. But you think that he could have that 20 homer power while everyone else doesn't, is what you're saying.
I think he's a stretch to get to 20 home runs, but I think he could be in the upper teens, and that may be good enough to be top 10 at shortstop this year.
Okay. I got a sleeper for you. Jose Reyes. I just don't think that David Wright is going to stay healthy. And I think when David Wright gets hurt, Reyes will be the most added player in fantasy. And you don't have to draft him, but he wasn't bad last year. And,
no, he wasn't. The problem is he'll need Asdrubal Cabrera to get hurt so he can pick up shortstop eligibility.
He's not shortstop eligible?
No.
There's a bad sleeper, Adam.
I think that, Asdrubal Cabrera got hurt last year, and I could see Reyes getting, they got to get Reyes some playing time.
Try again.
It only takes 5 games.
Right. And they got to get Reyes some playing time.
All right, if healthy, Reyes will bounce around a lot. I think they said four days a week they want him leading off by playing somewhere.
Yeah. See? So Reyes will get playing time no matter what. Scott, who's your sleeper?
I'm going to go with Jose Peraza for now. We'll see how long he's able to remain a sleeper now that Brandon Phillips is out of the picture and second base is free for him. Currently eligible as shortstop and outfield. I felt like because of his versatility, he was going to play a ton even if Phillips stayed, so I wasn't really dissuaded by that. But Peraza is, I think, going to be an elite source of stolen bases this year. Obviously, in part-time work last year, he showed that kind of potential. 40 steal potential. Always hit for a high average in the minors, over 300, and hit about 320 during his major league stint last year. So I think he's going to be a good source of that, too. No power whatsoever. Not a great on-base guy, either. Doesn't walk a lot. So it may be more of a roto sleeper. Certainly, that's going to be where I'm most motivated to draft him. But when you're stealing bases in the quantity he can, and it's a points league where it's 2 points a steal, like our standard format, in the games he started last year, because obviously he came off the bench a lot, in the games Peraza started last year, he averaged more head-to-head points per game than Francisco Lindor. So I don't think it's crazy to think he could be a top 10, top 8 shortstop in points leagues as well.
Interesting.
I've kind of gotten used to drafting him in the round 14 range, even in Roto.
But
probably going to push.
Yeah, how high?
10, maybe.
How high does he have to go before he's not a sleeper anymore? Because he may have already reached it.
I think when he starts leapfrogging Addison Russell, that's probably appropriate value for him in a Roto league, going just ahead of Addison Russell.
Okay, so this is Jose Peraza we're talking about. Let's do a bust, and then we'll review average draft position. Scott, your bust at shortstop.
My bust, I already kind of mentioned Crawford, but we got into that already. I'm going to go...
Nunez?
Well, no. Yeah, actually, yeah, sorry. I considered a few ideas. Xander Bogaerts was one, but I talked about him. So yeah, let's go with Nunez. Nunez is a very interesting case. He might be the most... He's going to be the crux of a lot of people's seasons this year because of how stolen bases stack up and where you can get Eduardo Nunez. You can get him round 10 or later. And outside of Jose Peraza, there isn't a lot of surefire starters who can give you the 40 steals Nunez did at that stage of the draft and beyond. You know, there's guys like Travis Jankowski and Jerod Dyson late in drafts who aren't for sure going to play every day. We know, though, that Nunez is the Giants' third baseman, and he stole 40 bases last year while also hitting 16 home runs. So, in theory, you're drafting him.
Is this your sleeper or your bust?
I'm getting there. In theory, you're drafting him for steals help where you can't normally get it. and without sacrificing in a lot of other areas. The problem, though, is it's really hard to buy what Eduardo Nunez did last year. Extensive track record as a part-time player where he just gave virtually nothing to fantasy owners. And then in the second half last year, hit .244 with a .654 OPS. So a lot of it was front-loaded. It's a weird case because I feel like if you get left out of steals early, you kind of just have to ignore that voice in your head saying Eduardo Nunez is a bust and take him and hope for the best because he's your best hope for making up ground to that category in the middle rounds. But you really don't want to put yourself in that position.
Yeah. Nunez, in 50 games with the Giants, he only hit 4 home runs. It's not a good park. We know that. Probably worse for lefties, but yeah, I don't know. Don't want him on my team, but I understand the dilemma. You might need steals. Who's a bust at shortstop?
Well, I already talked about Gene Segura yesterday, so we'll go Jonathan Villar today.
Yeah, let's talk about Jonathan Villar because here's the thing. He led all shortstops in walks. That is impressive. He's going to get the opportunity. He's going to be second base eligible. He's already third base VR and shortstop eligible. He'll be second base eligible in a week once the season starts. He batted .284 in 2015. He batted .285 in 2016. Sure, the power was a surprising jump, but 62 steals. Okay, the bottom line is, I know that like VR was surprising. Nobody drafted him last year, and he ended up being the number 3 shortstop in points, number 1 in Roto. I can't really see what was so fluky about last year, other than I don't expect 19 home runs this year.
373 BABIP.
But he hit .284 2 years in a row now.
The first year that he hit .284, he did it in 120 plate.
Yeah, he did. I know, but he still did it.
Like, he's a .250, .260 hitter. 20% home run to fly ball rate. That's absolutely not happening again. So if he drops down to .255 and he hits 12 home runs, listen, he might steal 40 bases. He might be Eduardo Nunez. He's being drafted in the third round.
Yeah.
He's got third round ADP. He's not. I don't think he's going to score 90 runs again.
The fact that he led shortstops in walks, he had 80.
That's good.
Walks, 79 walks. It's a lot of walks.
Congratulations. I'm not saying he's bad. He's being drafted in the third round. People are drafting him ahead of Xander Bogaerts and Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, Scott did that in the categories league.
That's why I said
the categories league. Because, I mean, you trust he's going to steal bases. Though.
I think,
probably lose some batting average. He may lose some home runs.
Is it that far out of the realm of possibility that he's Eduardo Nunez? Who's being drafted in the 11th round.
Right, except Eduardo Nunez is downgraded to the 11th round. He didn't actually perform like an 11th rounder last year.
Right. So, did he perform like a third rounder?
Probably not, but probably not far off either.
Okay.
I'll say .255, 12 home runs, 75 runs, 50 RBI, 40 stolen bases.
Would you take Trevor Story over Jonathan Villar?
Yes.
Yeah. And you have Aledmys Diaz over Villar?
Yep.
Okay, they're back-to-back. All right, ADP. Manny Machado is going 8th overall. Corey Seager and Carlos Correa are going like 18th, 19th overall, so they're mid-second-round picks. Then you're cool with that, right? I mean, that might be even a little late on Seager and Correa.
I would take them before that, yes.
Okay. So, like, here are some players going ahead of Seager and Correa. Miguel Cabrera, Max Scherzer, Charlie Blackmon, Madison Bumgarner, and Trey Turner. Disagree with any of that?
I would take the 2 shortstops over all of those players.
Really?
What were they again?
They were Trey Turner. Anthony Rizzo. You would not take him over Rizzo, though.
You didn't say Rizzo.
Yeah, I didn't say him. But
he said Miguel Cabrera.
Okay. Yeah, so Turner, Scherzer, Cabrera, Blackmon, Bumgarner.
Would I take Seager over them?
Or Correa.
Or Correa.
And or Correa.
I know I have them ranked that way now. Yes. I keep being more motivated to draft Trey Turner as time goes on, so we'll see if I hold out all preseason.
Okay. Now, here's the thing you have to consider. If you're looking at Miguel Cabrera or Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, if you don't take Miguel Cabrera there, you're not going to get Votto. You're not going to get Encarnacion. You're not going to get Freeman based on current ADP, and you might probably don't want Freeman if you're Heath or, you know, if any of us in the third round.
Right.
In the third round.
Well, Not in the third round, no.
So, like, you can take Seager there and be, and have to go to the Abreu, Chris Davis group at first base, or you could take Cabrera there and then take maybe Bogaerts, Lindor, VR in the third round.
But that's not comparing apples to apples, because we're not going to take Abreu or Chris Davis in the third round.
No, you're not, but,
It would be Seager and Freeman, or Miggy and Bogaerts.
And, but you don't want to take Freeman there. I know that. No. And based on ADP, yeah, Freeman might be there. He's going 27th in between Lindor and Bogaerts. So yeah. But I think you like the shortstop value there of Lindor Bogaerts better than Freeman in round three.
What I would say is if I take Seager there, I can take Chris Davis, and I'm good with Seager and Chris Davis.
Okay. All right, just something to think about.
In the third round.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, in round three, you've got the Lindor, Bogaerts, VR group, and also Trevor Story is going in round three right now in rotisserie leagues.
Seems a little high.
Yeah, wouldn't do that.
Check.
I dispute the ADP. Not my leagues.
Now, by the way, when Trey Turner gets shortstop eligibility, where are you ranking him at the position?
Trey Turner gets shortstop eligibility. I mean,
fourth,
because it's going to be a week where he gains it. So,
yes.
Based on where he is in my top 300, I would have to say fourth too. But you know, I may move him up to second. I'm having a hard time talking myself out of Trey Turner. Just steals are so valuable, and when you get a player who contributes in anything else, like, man, it's hard to pass that up.
Okay. But he's right there with Seager and Correa.
For me, yeah.
All right, so this is the funny thing about ADP. You got Machado 8th overall. You got Corey Seager 18th. Carlos Correa 18th or 19th. Francisco Lindor, Xander Bogaerts, Jonathan Villar, Trevor Story. They're all going in round three. Then your next shortstop off the board is Gene Segura, who's going at the beginning of round six. It's two full rounds without a shortstop. That's the 8th shortstop off the board, not including Turner. Then in round... six is Segura. The next shortstop is round 11, the end of round 11. You're going five rounds without a shortstop, and it's Aledmys Diaz.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I said round seven.
But I think this is a good time to look at the different sites, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we've got limited data on CBS, and it's like the start of the ninth, end of the eighth on CBS. It's the 13th round on Yahoo.
Okay.
Yahoo.
And then we got Eduardo Nunez in round 12, Addison Russell in round 12. Would you guys both take Russell over Nunez?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Troy Tulowitzki, round 12. Any chance of a Tulowitzki bounce back?
There's a chance. I'm not counting on it.
I mean, I think where he's being drafted is appropriate.
Javier Baez, round 13.
Too early.
Jose Peraza, round 13.
I don't think Baez is even shortstop eligible on our site, and I don't know how quickly he'll get that. Peraza in round 13, I think, is great. If he starts moving up ahead of round 10, then maybe the risk outweighs the reward, but round 13 is still great.
And he's already up to round 11 on CBS, so you'll get him there, Scott.
And Elvis Andrews and Brad Miller are going in round 14. And these guys were both top 12 shortstops, top 11 shortstops last year. Andrews hit 302, which was very high for him, and 8 home runs and 24 steals. He also hit 31 doubles and 7 triples. So he had a great second half, Elvis Andrews. And Brad Miller hit 30 home runs. So, you know, no love for them. They're the 15th and 16th shortstops off the board, not including Trey Turner. But Andrews and Miller... you know, top 12 last year, no love in the rankings. What up
right,
with that?
When you're barely top 12, I feel like we've talked about this in the past, but maybe not so much this year. When you're barely top 12 the previous year, that means all those players who finished just outside of the 12 because of injury or because they didn't quite meet their full upside, there's a good chance they're going to leapfrog you.
Well, the other thing I would say is if you barely finish top 12, you better have, that better not have been your career year.
And in Miller's case, it certainly was.
Right.
Elvis Andrews sounds like the batting average was on the high side at least. Maybe could steal more bases than he did last year, but certainly no guarantee of that. They're both boring, last resort types, I think, in fantasy.
But Andrews has been 3 years in a row, 24 to 27 steals, which is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
And between 69 and 75 runs, which isn't great. 46, 47 walks. He's been a pretty consistent player. Yeah, the batting average was 302 last year. He had been hitting like 260. So, you know, that was surprising. But he was ninth in both points in Roto. He wasn't just barely a top 12 shortstop. But yeah, I think I understand not much love. But if you need some steals, like if you need some steals late, I don't know that Elvis Andrews three rounds after Eduardo Nunez isn't a good, I think that is a good pick.
I don't know. That's still on the early side to me. Knowing you can probably get Keon Broxton later, who could deliver a lot more steals and maybe some power to go with it.
Okay.
Even like Hernan Perez, who has, you know, so versatile, won't play as regularly as Andrews, but I would suspect will out-steal him. So,
okay.
I mean, those guys are available much later. And sorry for the voice cracking there.
That's all right. And then there's Dansby Swanson going in round 15.
Swanson.
Samson.
I like Swanson.
I know,
I'd like
yeah.
to take him there ahead of Andrews or Miller.
He batted 302 with three home runs and three steals, seven doubles in 38 games. Dansby Swanson is slated to bat second for the Braves, could score a lot of runs, get a lot of at-bats.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if he stole 20 bases, to be perfectly honest, and with double-digit home runs at least, maybe even 15 home runs. With a good batting average.
All right. There's some talent here. Some very good young talent at shortstop. It's a possibility that shortstop is a great position this year. Maybe not the deepest. We could have some truly great players at shortstop this year. And then late round picks. You like any of these guys? Let's see. We got Tim Anderson. I know Heath likes him. Brandon Crawford. I know Heath likes him. Jed Jerko.
And I want to go back to Crawford for just a second because we've called him both a sleeper and a bust on this podcast. His average draft position is 222nd overall. He can't be a bust there, right?
222nd overall is like a
19th rounder.
19th round. Yeah, I mean, I guess with the ADP data, equipped with the ADP data, assuming it remains the same, I may have to remove him from my bust list. I was under the impression, perhaps from looking at your and Chris's rankings,
it's probably me and
that
Chris.
People were going to draft him based on his numbers from 2 years ago, when that, to me, appears to be the clear outlier season.
Yeah. He's another guy, well, I'm not sure. I really don't like guys who do so much damage in like one hot stretch, which is, I think, what happened to Wellington Castillo a couple years ago. And I feel like Crawford was that, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
I feel like Crawford belongs in the tier with... At the very least, you can't put him definitively below the Elvis Andrews, Brad Miller tier.
I would. You think he has the potential for high teens home runs? I think he might struggle to even reach the dozen he hit a year ago because the home run to fly ball ratio went back to normal last year. The average fly ball distance went back to normal. Like he just returned to his norms in those two areas when those were the ones that clearly reflected the big power jump of 2 years ago.
Yeah, we're going to do another podcast at some point talking about like late round potential. Guys like Orlando Arcia that we haven't spoken about. But he is a late round pick. So is Marcus Semien, who was 12th last year at shortstop. Didi Gregorius, who was 14th. Asdrubal Cabrera. Cabrera hit, 23 home runs in a... He had 23 home runs and didn't play that many games. I don't know, whatever. He had 280 with 23 home runs. It's pretty impressive. Dealt with some knee issues, and Cabrera was the number 15 shortstop last year. So there are some late round picks that have appeal. I don't know how much. Gleyber Torres, don't expect to see him. Orlando Arcia, Brendan Rodgers, Zach Cozart, Jose Reyes, who's not eligible in CBS Sports Leagues, I just learned.
Yeah. I don't expect to see Rodgers or Torres this year, so they're obviously high-end prospects. I think more likely shortstop prospects who can contribute this year.
You know what, Scott, I'm going to interrupt you. Save that for another show, but your final thought will be Orlando Arcia, guys. What kind of potential does he have this year?
I this might not be fair, but I feel like his upside is what my expectation is for Tim Anderson.
Upside is what you
expect for Anderson.
Okay.
Like that's, the very best
that's very
case scenario.
Inside the mind of Heath right there.
Which I, well, I already talked about what my expectation
yeah,
was
okay,
for Anderson
no, fair enough,
on the show
fair
earlier.
Enough. Yeah, I mean, Arcia, like, such a good prospect pedigree that I don't know that it's fair to assess him just on the minor league numbers, which aren't that special for fantasy purposes, because he can run a little, made contact at a pretty good rate. But then when he comes up to the majors and just is not even usable, like,
dreadful.
Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of scary. I think, like, just as a blind hope that he capitalizes on the upside with a late round pick, you know, that's a fine way to approach him. But, like, certainly when you get into an NL format and you have to pay, you actually have to give up something of value for him. Like, it's not worth it to me. He hasn't shown enough for me to do that.
Cool. Well, that is shortstop for you for 2017. Tomorrow we rock third base for Heath Cummings and Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. See you tomorrow.